Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for iOS Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
We have a recap of everything iOS related that they announced at WWDC.
I'm going to show you some of my favorite games, including a Steven Universe title and a new Monument Valley.
And if you can't wait for that augmented reality kit coming for iOS, I have an iOS augmented reality app you can download right now. All that and a whole lot more coming up on iOS Today. This episode of iOS Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/iOS Today. And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get 3 meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/iOS today.
And by Oars and Alps, powerful skincare made for a guy's active lifestyle. Join thousands of men using Oars and Alps today. Go to oarsandalps.com/twit to receive 15% off your first order.
Welcome to iOS Today. I am Megan Maroney. Leo Laporte is on vacation. Joining me today is Nate Oliveris-Giles.
Yep, filling in.
Filled in. We did the WWDC keynote. We talked for just the right amount of time because we asked people to email us and tell us that we talked just the right amount of time.
Yeah, we want to offer that play-by-play, that analysis, that color commentary, but we also don't want to steal the show from Tim Cook and company. So we got some tweets saying that we nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
But
because we asked for tweets
to say that we nailed it. Yeah. But tell us what you really thought, if you want or not, you know.
No, we want honest feedback, but you can download that at twit.tv when it's up. But today we're going to talk about iOS stuff, Apple Watch, iPhone, iPad. And usually when Leo's on vacation, I have to call in an expert from outside of the studio. But Nate has all the things.
All the things. That's me. The in-studio expert-ish.
Mm-hmm. And you have the big iPad Pro already. We have people in the chat room asking what that is.
That's this is the 12.9. This is the first generation. Here are some of my notes from the WWDC keynote. Really exciting stuff. I got to say, I really love, this original big iPad Pro. And I was excited to see some of those updates today, including the 10.5-inch screen size in basically what is the same 9.7-inch size body, right? So a bigger screen for essentially the same size, smaller iPad Pro. I kind of wanted to see an iPad Pro Mini. They didn't announce that. There's been no rumors of that. I think I might just be the only person on the universe who wants something that's more of a Moleskine notebook sized iPad Pro. But interesting stuff from WWDC.
Well, that was what I asked you because I thought, well, is the one that you have, is mm-hmm. the 9.7-inch, that's 9.7-inch, the one I have, is that too small or too big? But you are an artist. You draw.
I do.
So you like the bigger screen for drawing, but you would like just a tiny sketch pad type.
Yeah, I guess you just can't make me happy here. In trying to use the iPad Pro as a laptop replacement to see if, Apple's position that you can do such a thing, if that's worthwhile or not, I found that I can do most of what I need on here, whether it's surfing the web or email, since I'm doing so much stuff in the cloud, and it's pretty great. But yeah, I do love, when I'm sitting on my couch at the end of a day, reading an ebook or, maybe I'm watching a basketball game and using Twitter or whatever. A lot of times it's an iPad Mini that I have gone for because it's such a nice small size. It's kind of great for planes. It's a little bit clumsier on that in-flight tray. Then that's kind of why I was hoping for something in the mini category. But I think it's actually smart. More of the demand really is going to be with this 10.5 inch size inside of the 9.7 inch body again, giving you a little bit more bang for your buck there.
Well, I have the 7 Plus, and it's really just, if you look at my screen now, it's kind of an iPad mini. I mean, what more do you want?
Well, and that's a good point. Although, interestingly enough, with iOS 11, they're going to be introducing a lot of features that bring the iPhone and the iPad further apart, right? A lot of times, just to what you're saying, why do I need an iPad mini if I got an iPhone Plus? Mm-hmm. Big screen, it's basically almost there. And now, for the larger screens on the Pros, you're going to have true multitasking, more features for Pencil, a file finder app, all sorts of great stuff that was announced at WWDC to look forward if you're actually trying to use this as a laptop replacement. Now, we can't say if those features live up to their hype and actually will allow you to leave your laptop at home. But if they deliver on their promise, that could be pretty great.
Mm-hmm. Also, the problem that you would have with the iPhone Plus, you can't draw on it with the Apple Pencil, right? It doesn't
exactly
have, that would be nice to have. That would be nice to have.
Yeah.
So let's start with the Apple Watch. That was what they started with after they gave their stats of how many apps are in the App Store, and they played this terrifying post apocalyptic.
Oh, that video at the beginning. It's like, where are you going with this? So one guy was setting up in a server room, undoes a plug so he can put in like his little electric waterfall or whatever, robotic waterfall, and then all of the apps go down, everyone loses their apps, and they showed all these Apple devices that were automatically shutting down. Now, of course, Tim Cook said it's a good thing that it isn't reality, but it was a terrifying reality for a minute. And cars were wrecking into each other. It was basically a post-apocalyptic world.
Right. So after they said, keep making apps,
the world depends on it.
Post-apocalyptic. Yes. I'm trying to make up with an app pun. Yeah. I know how to say apocalypse.
I like apocalyptic. I think I said it wrong, but I like what you said.
All right. So then they started talking about the Apple Watch. There are some improvements to the fitness features. They started with that, which I think is why a lot of people buy it. The health and fitness, like whether you're an active person running marathons or whether you're just someone that needs to get a reminder to stand up off of the couch once or twice a day. They had some new features there that were interesting. What's always interesting to me is being able to track other workouts besides running, walking, and biking. And so they did have some of that. They had the high intensity interval training, the HIIT, which I like to do that. And they somehow are going to track that.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. In the past, I've really liked Runkeeper as an app because I would do interval training during runs, and it would literally tell me in my headphones, all right, now is when you should be sprinting. Now you should cool off for 30 seconds and kind of telling you how to actually do your intervals, right? A little coach in your ear. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of other apps offer something like that. And I was kind of hoping that they would say, hey, maybe Siri will be speaking in your ear. They didn't mention that, but they did say that they will have this high intensity interval training. We'll have to see how it works. Mm-hmm. I'd really like to try that out. But it seems like it's not only a trendy thing, but it's a really great way to build up endurance if you're going on, whether you're doing your first, 5K from your couch or whether you're doing that full marathon or that triathlon or whatever it might be.
Yeah. And they had, of course, you can track swimming too. If you have the Apple Watch 2, don't try to swim in the first Apple Watch, but the Apple Watch 2. So it is able to tell, like you say, if you're in a lap pool or an open water swim, but now it has some improvements. If you're resting, that it knows that you've finished
if you rest between laps, it'll recognize that and then count that for you, which seems super helpful.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the interesting things, one of the most interesting things for the Apple Watch to me was that now the NFC sensor in the watch will be compatible with other fitness equipment that you'd find in a gym that, if your gym has up-to-date stuff, newer stuff, and they had big names there, Lifetime Fitness and all these different brands. So, you're running on a treadmill and maybe it's getting the elevation data that your watch isn't getting. Now, it'll feed that data to your watch and into the health apps or whatever. So you're going to see this with treadmills and you're going to see like Stairmasters. And I feel like this is the kind of thing that's like kind of built for like the soul cycles of the world or whatever, right? You're going to have that latest up-to-date machine, and this really hits on, again, that kind of fitness focus. And I feel like for a lot of people, the reason why folks are keeping an Apple Watch on their wrist, if you're one of those sorts of people like we are, it's probably fitness and then maybe just keeping track of like what you have to do next. I know I live and die by my calendar, and having my calendar entry right there is kind of always key. So these seem like really smart moves, but not necessarily pushing the Apple Watch into new ground either.
Yeah, I don't think so. Well, the new ground was the integration with Apple Music. There's mm-hmm. better integration now. So especially if you have ear pods, it's great for exercising. You can just turn on your exercise playlist. You didn't have playlists
Not before. Yeah.
So that'll be great. I mean, everyone, I don't know. If I can't run more than half a mile without music.
Well, I'm hoping that, music just kind of helps you keep your pace, gives you a little bit of boost of energy, keeps you motivated. I'm wondering, though, I'm hoping that those playlists, and, you know, I wasn't quite clear in watching the keynote, I'm hoping those playlists aren't dependent on the AirPods, that it's something that'll work if you have other wireless headphones. Like, I have some the Beats workout ones, and I'm hoping it works with that still, but, you know, we'll see. I have to try that out, too.
I hope so, too, because they had a woman that was mid-stride run with her AirPod, and I really would, I feel like I'm going to write Apple and ask them, can I actually see that woman running with her AirPods? You said you ran around the room with them.
I've, you know, and back when I worked at the Wall Street Journal, we had them, I was running through the office, and then I've run with them, you know, through my apartment just to see if they'd fall out, and they don't fall out. Now it really depends on your ear shape, and Apple says that they've made it for like the broadest swath possible of the population, but they're not cheap, and I like them, so I don't want to lose them. And you know, the Beats workout headphones that I have, they're made of this kind of nice rubber that doesn't feel gross after you get sweaty with them, you know? And so I've never taken my AirPods on a fully fledged run. But I guess, you know, we should just buck up and just say, okay, for the sake of science and for the sake of journalism, let's do it.
You should do it. I've done it, and you can take a look at my AirPods. They fall out all over the place. I actually documented my run, and I took a picture every time they fell off, and they've got all these dents in them. Oh. So, I mean, and I've tried various rubber casings you can put over them to stick them in your ear. Yeah. I have weird ears. That's what Apple wants me to believe. It's not them, it's me. It's my fault. I can't even walk the dog without them falling.
Oh, wow.
Like, slowly walk the dog without them falling out.
Ooh, no good.
So I listen to them at my desk, and that's pretty much it. And that's not great then either, because you don't know. You sit next to me, you don't know you're talking to me, and I'm just like, because my hair covers them, you have no idea.
True.
Actually, it can be good sometimes. Sometimes he goes on a little bit too long. It's good to have AirPods. What else? I'm just kidding.
It's a great accessory if you have me in your life.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So that was all the Apple Watch stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then they named macOS,
right,
which isn't iOS, but macOS has a new name.
High Sierra, which caused a lot of weed puns, if I may say.
Yeah, he said it's a fully baked operating system. Craig Federighi, Air Force One, said it was a fully baked operating system.
I like the High Sierras as a place to visit.
I think it's kind of a fun operating system name, too, because we had Lion, then we had Mountain Lion, we had Leopard, then we had Snow Leopard, now we have Sierra, we have High Sierra. I guess if you're a Mac fan, it's a little bit of a nerdy, you know, nod to past tradition or whatever. Mm-hmm. But really, it seems like this operating system was kind of focused on refining what Sierra already is, and not necessarily giving it like a full, you know, makeover or anything like that. So the name telegraphs that we're just going to, don't see any like, you know, groundbreaking stuff here, but you're just going to see a better version of what you already got.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about that at the end of the keynote. If you want to see just a quick roundup of everything they talked about macOS related, you can check that out. And Jason and I will probably talk again about it on Tech News Today.
Yeah.
But iOS 11.
Yes.
That was introduced. Oh, one Apple Watch thing I forgot to say. There's going to be a flashlight on the Apple Watch.
I got one more after you. But yes, the flashlight.
He kind of threw that out, but that's been something that I've wanted for a long time. Like, if you're just in the dark and you just suddenly need, you know, you've got this thing on your watch. And
instead of having
to
scramble for your phone and then unlocking it. Yeah, I mean, it makes so much sense.
Right. Android Wear has it. That was when I realized, it can be done. It's not going to run out your battery. So that's exciting. Did you have another Apple Watch thing?
Yeah. I like the Mickey Mouse watch faces. Like, when it's the weekend and I don't want to see any calendar entries, I go to Mickey or Minnie, right? And I've always kind of wanted a little Buzz Lightyear, and I was hoping it would actually be the same as the Mickey, where it's like Buzz and his hands just move, but it's not. It's actually like animated Buzz and Woody, and I think there were some other characters, and they're like
Woody.
Yeah,
I forgot what her name is.
They're like running across. They're like running across the screen, like banging into each other. I mean, pretty slick animations. I was hoping that they would say that they're going to open this up to third parties. So, you know, maybe like Nintendo would make a Mario watch face, or your favorite sports team would make something or whatever. But they're not doing that. As you pointed out in the keynote, third parties really can only alter the complications on watch faces and not create their own fully fledged take over the whole screen watch face.
Very Apple.
Yeah. But with iOS 11, macOS. There is the Apple file system that is basically the infrastructure of iOS is now coming over to the Mac. And they say it'll save space, it'll speed things up on your Macs. I feel like that should also make things a little bit easier for iOS developers to make Mac apps as well. But, you know, if you want to look for signs of the two operating systems coming together, as much as Apple's trying to tell you that they're staying apart, you know, that might be one to stoke your fire there.
Yeah, I mean, I am impressed with the APFS on the iPhone. I feel like it's really sped up my iPhone, made the battery last longer. It could be just a placebo effect. I don't know. But I know I got the iPhone 6 when it came out and the 6S when it came out and the 7. And by this time, like, you know, this is almost, I guess, almost a year, you know, a little shy, maybe 8 months old. Like, it was starting to be sluggish and slow down. The battery didn't last the whole day. I'm just not feeling that. I don't know if that's APFS or just an improvement in the 7 Plus or they just a change in the way I use it. I don't know. But it's definitely, I'm still happy with it. These 8 months later, it's so old.
how quickly things become obsolete, right?
I know, exactly. So what else? They didn't mention a dark mode. That was something that we thought, but they
for
didn't.
iOS 11, there was rumors of the dark mode and they didn't mention it. So if they're building it, they're keeping it to themselves so far.
Apple Pay, that was an interesting feature to both of us, being able to pay your friends automatically, like Venmo or PayPal, within iMessage.
Yeah, I love that they did it within iMessage because, you know, that's where you're going to have those conversations of, hey, I just picked up the movie tickets, you know, send me cash or whatever. And rather than going out of that app into Venmo or into Square Cash or into PayPal, whatever it is that you might use, now you can just do it within iMessage using Apple Pay. So pretty smart. It seems really simple and easy to use. You know, one thing I didn't see is if there's going to be like a view of some sort in Apple Pay to see all your transactions. I do like how Square Cash and Venmo have histories of the money that we sent back and forth so you can budget properly or whatever. This seems like a really smart and easy way to offer that feature. And as you mentioned earlier in our play-by-play of the keynote, the WWDC keynote, Facebook's approach to sending money back and forth is inside of Facebook Messenger 2. This is a super popular approach for sending money within a lot of popular chat apps in Asia and internationally. So it seems like a really natural behavior for people. There was rumors that it might be a standalone app or built into Wallet somehow, but building it into iMessage, I think probably makes sense, right?
It's just one of those awkward things that you don't want to deal with. I know that Venmo is really popular among younger people than myself, but it's paying people through PayPal is what I do with my friends. And it's because they have a lot of different email addresses. And so many times, like, I've given an email address and they said, you know, I think you forgot to pay me. And I was like, well, I sent you PayPal through this email address and it's not the one they used. Yeah. And so I look like, you know, I'm trying to stiff them and I'm not. Mm-hmm. And if it were just in this text message where we're all talking about, you know, who paid for what anyway, it would be super easy to do that. And then, yeah, like you said, it'd be great to have a history. But even though you could just scroll through your text message and see, oh, look, that person paid me.
Yeah. And, you know, they also announced one thing that it just seems so like, why didn't I ever do this before? But finally, iMessage syncing across all your devices. So if you delete, you know, you just sent me a Snapchat of me with a silly bunny or sheep ears. Or I don't really know what animal that is. But it's like if I delete that on my phone, it won't show up on my iPad or my Mac. And having that syncing seems really, really nice. I'm glad they're finally bringing that to iMessage. kind of an overdue thing.
Yeah, yeah. You should delete that picture I took of you. It's really embarrassing. I also tweeted it, so. it's actually too late. Delete it or not. Apple Maps, a cool. This was, I think, maybe one of my favorite features. There are a lot of new features in Apple Maps. Lane guidance.
Lane guidance can be so helpful.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Yeah, I like that. It's do not disturb while driving. That's what it's called. Mm-hmm. So once you hook your phone up to your Bluetooth in your car, it recognizes that you're in a car, and then it will, if a text message comes in to you, it will respond, I'm driving.
Yep.
And so if to any of you said, but what if it's an emergency text message, then the response also says, if this is urgent, reply urgent, and then it will come through, which I thought was really smart. And then the other question everyone always asks about this is, well, what if I'm a passenger? Usually the passengers in my car aren't connected through Bluetooth, so I don't. It's usually because I'm in control of that, but sometimes I guess they would. But you could just turn it off. You just say, I'm a passenger. I'm not driving. And if you hate it and you are, and you think I can text and drive all I want, I'm better than anyone else at it, you're not. A, and B, you can say, I'm not driving. You can lie and endanger yourself and others. Please don't do that.
I'm sure there, I don't know, we'll see, but I would think there might even be a way to turn it off in settings
sure
or something if
is.
You wanted to, for those who really want to. But this seems like a smart and practical thing that should exist, and I'm glad that it does.
I am too. This is such a hot button, though. Whenever we've talked about it, people are like, the Apple shouldn't control me like this. This is paternalistic, and I get that. And so, you know, even if you're not a texter and driver and you just don't want Apple controlling you like that, you can turn it off.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, the data is there, you know, with the number of accidents and fatalities and all that stuff, that as good as we might think we are, just as you said, you know, you're not. Mm-hmm. And the one time you slip up might be the one time that could cost your life, right?
Yeah.
So it, you know, good on Apple for making that.
Right. And I do appreciate Apple reminding me, because I do forget. It's just something takes over, and it's just like, oh, this text message is more important, and the alert. And you brought up, you wonder what it's going to do with the Apple Watch. Like, it's certainly less dangerous to do that, but still dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I always connect my phone to my car via Bluetooth. I'm driving, and, you know, I'll just be listening to music, and I don't have Android Auto or CarPlay in my car. I have an older, less sophisticated interface on a touchscreen, and so no notifications, no apps to interact with, just streaming of music or audio for maps. And but I have my Apple Watch on, and sometimes I'll be driving and I'll feel it vibrating, and I try hard not to look at it, because as you mentioned, you know, it's a lot easier to do it, but it's still very unsafe. But there's kind of always that like want. It's like, oh, you know, what am I missing out on? And I kind of would just rather not know and have it just kept away until it's time. And and hopefully this will remove some of that, like, what am I missing out on? Itchiness.
Right, exactly. There were some Siri announcements. Siri has a new voice. She's a bit more expressive.
Yeah, sounds less robotic, a little smoother, a little bit more human-ish, which is interesting in both male and female voices. They did also, you know, and it's important to keep in mind, part of what these developer keynotes are some chest thumping for the respective companies, so they're going to brag a little bit as well. And they mentioned that Siri is available in more countries and languages than anyone else. I think, like, you know, dozens of countries and hundreds of languages or whatever. But it did sound like a genuinely better Siri voice in what they showed on stage, and that's interesting. But there's also a little bit more contextual awareness, I guess, with Siri. So it sounds like Siri should be getting smarter somewhat. And more control over third-party apps, you know, voice controls, things like this, which will be super necessary if the HomePod, which we'll talk about later, their answer to Amazon Echo and Google Home speakers, is going to be a competent competitor. So, yeah, a smarter and smoother-sounding Siri. And also, in watchOS, there's the new Siri watch interface, which will deliver prompts and alerts and information contextually based on kind of what time of day it is, where you're at, what you're doing, these sorts of things. Now, these are, of course, bragging points for the Google Assistant and Amazon's, you know, if you have an Echo, now would be the time to mute your speaker, Alexa. You can unmute it now. And then... but having that context is important, right? Because that's what makes the assistant actually helpful. But Apple said that all of that kind of computing is really being done end-to-end encrypted if it is being sent to their cloud, you know, remote servers, but most of it's being handled on device. So privacy being a focus here for Siri, as always.
Yeah, there's also always a funny thing going on in these keynotes today about things that Apple comes out with that they sort of say, like, isn't this amazing that we can do this? And everyone's like, ah, oh, Google's been doing that forever. But at the same time, they haven't been, you know, if you're in the Apple ecosystem, it's okay to say, like, hey, I know Google's been doing this forever, and I don't have an Android phone. I have an iPhone, and I'm super excited. And one example was translations with Siri.
Yeah.
So with the Google Assistant, and I have been using the Google Assistant app on the iPhone a lot. Like, if you say, like, you know, how do you say, where's the police station in German? Then it'll say it in German.
Yeah.
And before, Siri would just say, here's what I found on the web about how to find the police station in Germany.
Yeah.
And so now,
which is not what you need in an emergency.
No. And so, now she or he will read it. Read it. Say it out loud in German. So you can hear.
German or Chinese or Spanish or Italian, all these different languages. Mm-hmm. That seems super, super helpful. And it's those sorts of things. And, you know, to be fair, there's not a single, voice controlled assistant that I'm super, super happy with out there. I have complaints with all of them, but that's the sort of thing that all of these assistants need to have if they're going to be as indispensable to our daily lives as these companies want them to be, right? So it's something that they didn't have before, and it is something that Google offered. But again, they're actually doing that in a different way that treats data and privacy differently. I kind of wish Apple would explain that a little bit better, or even Google, because the way that they build these technologies are actually different on the back end. And especially treating your data differently. But that's not necessarily something that we get to see as consumers or as journalists on this side of things. And it's never quite demystified as much as I'd like.
Mm-hmm. They also showed off iOS 11 for the iPad. A lot of cool new things there. Drag and drop. They said it was a drag fest.
Dragging and dropping between apps. So like a URL from Safari, throwing that into a text message or a photo. Did they only demo this with Apple apps, like Mail to Safari to iMessage, or did they
not Gmail to Google Photos? So if you use the Apple apps like Mail, then this would be great. But I would be surprised if they let you drag and drop something into Gmail. But I'm always willing to be surprised. But there was the dock; you could drag things into the dock. There was an app switcher. Just everything seemed easier than it is today, because right now, if you're like swiping, it, like, you can show what I'm my screen now. It's in some random order. I can't drag them onto the screen now. That's what you'll be able to do in the future. It's not in a random order. It's when you used it last, and then it becomes alphabetical or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, alphabetical. Mm-hmm. There's all my A's. But it's not that useful, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, all I can do is tap. But now you'll be able to drag it.
And then you're kind of constricted to that one space, and being able to move that other smaller app anywhere you want, that looks really useful.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm just one tap away from buying that iPad Pro. That's so. Yeah, new iPad Pros as well. I don't know if we said this. Are these the new ones? No, yeah, the 10.5 inch.
And those are for pre-order today and shipping next week, I think.
Yeah, I would buy one, but I don't have another at $650 laying around. But you should buy one.
I should buy one. That's interesting. I'm super happy with this 12.9 inch iPad Pro, and better performance. I guess, a better display that'll be able to, play back HDR content, a brighter display, more accurate, things like that. That all sounds pretty great, right? And a nice and welcome spec bump and performance bump for the iPad Pro. But everything in iOS 11 is coming to this, right? So including the Apple Pencil being compatible with a lot more apps, and then even a markup app for Apple Pencil. So if you take a screenshot or if you're doing something on the web, you can kind of mark things up, point it out, which is a feature that the Microsoft has had on the Surface devices with their Styli for quite a while. Am I going to upgrade or not? It's a tough question. I'm going to have to think about that a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't think you need to. You hold out for that iPad Pro Mini.
that'll never show up.
Yeah. Some other really interesting things that they had: handwriting recognition, searchable notes. So you could write by hand.
You can search through Spotlight.
Yes. If you still know how to write by hand with an Apple Pencil, those of us who still have some handwriting knowledge left, you can write by hand and then it's searchable. And the demo worked perfectly. In reality, we'll see.
Yeah, that was cool. There's also a flickable keyboard. The on-screen keyboard, if you want to go to like numbers or symbols or whatever, you used to have to like actually switch the entire keyboard. Now you can just kind of like flick down on the key, and then whatever's on the alternate, the number or the symbol or whatever, or the NA or whatever, will show up. So that actually looks like a time saver.
Yeah, that does too. That was the other thing they showed off. The 10.5 is the size of a normal size keyboard.
Yeah.
And on screen.
For both on screen and the cover, right?
That's a normal size keyboard. So I didn't really know what they meant. This is the first iPad that would have a normal size keyboard.
So like this would be a normal size keyboard for like a 15-inch laptop per se. Now for the 10.5, it looked like that'll be a normal size keyboard for like your regular MacBook or your MacBook Air or whatever. So a little bit more compact. The keys will be a little closer together and you won't have this border here on the sides.
Yeah. So everything they announced made me think I want to try to use this device as a laptop again. The file system, that's something that's been missing.
Oh, yeah. The Files app will not only show you the files on your device, show you the files in iCloud, but also Box, Dropbox, Microsoft OneDrive, lots of other cloud options. So that was pretty neat too, because a lot of folks like us have files all over the cloud.
Mm-hmm. I do.
In multiple different clouds. So that was nice to kind of bring that all together in one place.
Absolutely. AirPlay 2, that led into the final announcement. I think we've covered everything iPad before we get into HomePod. Do we get ProMotion, improved Apple Pencil, latency, True Tone display on the iPads.
And double the refresh rate on iPad displays for the Pro models. So right now these are 60 hertz, so they're refreshing 60 times a second. And I got to say, these look really smooth to me. But they say that the 120 hertz, what that will look like for you is when you're, scrolling through with your finger or, watching, whatever it is that you're checking out, it'll look smoother and that will result in better latency for the Pencil. I use the Pencil a lot and I don't feel like it's slow or ever kind of behind me. So we'll see how useful that will be. But more interesting might be the ability to adjust the refresh rate on the display. So if you're watching a video that's 48 frames per second and updating, maybe on YouTube or something, it'll match that. And then if you're watching something from a streaming service that's a higher frame rate and it's HDR, it'll match that. So basically a display that can kind of turn on and off features to match the video content you're looking at, which is super smart, as some services like Netflix or Amazon Prime have HDR content, and then others, like whatever random video you're watching on, Facebook or whatever, don't.
Right. So before we get into the HomePod, the music, the Siri speaker, we should talk about the redesign of the App Store.
Yeah.
Which was a little bit meh. I want it to be able to search. Like, I'm not going to just sit down with my App Store like I'm going to sit down with Apple News and browse through and see what's new and read stories.
And it kind of looked like Apple News and Apple Music a little bit, right? It kind of it felt like stylistically it would match that family of apps.
So I said I was looking for discoverability, and you said, well, that seems like it would improve discoverability if that's how you discover things, by just like looking through a magazine of the App Store. But what I want is to be able to discover something by saying, like, I want an app to do this, and then I would search for it.
You want to ask Siri for like in natural language or something like that?
Yes, that would be great.
Because right now there is the search, but you have to know, like, you have to type sports app, or you have to type like Monument Valley 2. You can't really just say, I want an app that would help me, get to a marathon by the end of the year or whatever, right? You have to say running app.
Yeah, something like that. Or, even the search, I wish the search was better. I feel like when there's a really super popular app, like I'm thinking of that one that did all of the photo filters last year. It was like the crazy, I can't remember what it was. But then suddenly there were all these fake apps in the App Store.
And it's hard to tell. Is this the one that everyone's talking about? Is that the one?
Yeah. And it was, they didn't, they somehow passed through the process, I think, because it was moving so fast, because they've become popular so fast, because usually the Apple Store is better about that, but I would like them to be even better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So right now in the App Store, you have basically featured, which is This is the newest apps. These are the apps that editors are calling out. And that includes games and you know, apps for coders, whatever that the editors from the App Store, I guess, want to, like I said, call out. And then you'd have categories. So, again, searching if, okay, I want to look for games, or I want to look for something entertainment, or I want to look for a lifestyle app. Then you have your charts. All three of those tabs now would live under one tab that's called apps. And then you'd have a specific tab for games. And then you had that thing called Today, which will have like little stories about, you know, some apps that I guess their editorial team will think is special enough to point your attention to.
Yeah, you don't need that because you have us, right? You don't need that Today. We're the Today tab.
That's one way of looking at it.
Yeah. All right, I think, are
is
we
that
ready?
All the iOS things?
I think
iOS 11?
So. I'm sure we missed something, but... let's talk about the HomePod. That's the Siri speaker. It looks like a marshmallow. If you get it in space gray, it's a space gray marshmallow.
It looks like a marshmallow to you. For me, maybe because I grew up in Phoenix, it kind of has like a cactus shape, like a barrel cactus shape, obviously without the prickly points.
Let's see if we can find
it. But it's covered in this fabric, so they have it in space gray, and then they have it in white. And it does kind of have that barrel cactus shape to it for me a little bit. It's about 7 inches tall. So it's maybe about as tall as an Amazon Echo, but it is a lot wider, and they have 7 tweeters in it. One of my biggest complaints with the Google Home or the Amazon Echo, and especially the Echo Dot, is they all sound terrible. And I'd love to have voice-controlled speakers that sounded good. This, you know... your speakers sound bad because they're small, and speakers need to move air to create sound, and that's how it works. It's physics. So this is a bigger speaker. I hope that it sounds great, but it sounds like they have some features that Phil Schiller was talking about on stage during the keynote that will kind of understand how big your room is, and then use basically some sort of tech to essentially mimic surround sound and kind of room filling sound. Sonos does have a feature like that where you actually walk around with your iPhone and it gauges how big the room is, and it can get better over time. I wonder if it'll be using something similar to gauge how big your room is. But they have a 6 microphone array in here as well, and they showed off the ability to kind of stereo pair, set up 2 speakers in one room, but they didn't say whether or not this has multi-room play. So let's say I have you know, one of these in my bedroom, I have 2 in my living room, and I have 1 in my kitchen. Then I can, you know, can I say something like, hey, Siri, you know, play, and now my phone just went off, you know, play Milt Jackson in all of my rooms, you know, and then it'll start playing some jazz music in all my rooms. That's the sort of feature that right now you can do with a Sonos speaker. You can't do it with voice control. You can do that with the Echo speakers. I'd like to know whether or not you can do that with this.
You can't do that with the Echo speakers.
Oh, you can't?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. No, they are all on their own.
They're all on their
own.
I
mean, unless you, if you stood in the middle of your house and you shouted the name, even then it's like they're slightly off.
Yeah.
And so.
It does, however, use its mics to understand which one is closest to you and then respond for that.
Right.
That.
Now it does that. Do that.
Yeah. I hope this does that as well.
Yeah.
Google Home does something similar. But these sorts of features are kind of expected for these home speakers. Now, granted, not a lot of people have voice-controlled speakers in their home, even though Amazon has sold millions of them, we believe, because they haven't ever released their numbers for sales. But this is still kind of a smaller niche thing, although it's very popular and the use case is obvious. You know, you're cooking, chopping, you know, got, you know, flour on your hands, whatever, in the kitchen. You want to be able to say it and speak to it. You're waking up in the morning. You want to say, hey, turn off the alarm, whatever it might be. So it seems like here's an opportunity for Apple, even though they're not the first with this sort of device, here's an opportunity for them to get ahead if it's useful enough. But it has to have the feature parity, basically, I think.
Well, they were really pushing the music. They're really pushing the, you know, the speakers and how great they are, because they know they're not the first.
Yeah.
They are the last.
And, you know, they're pretty lucky that the other speakers sound so bad. Like, if you really enjoy music, and I really do, music's a big part of my life. It's very important to me. I love it. And I listen to music every day to start my day off. Makes me happy. And like I said during the keynote, a lot of the reason why I've unplugged other voice controlled speakers, not necessarily because the utility isn't there, but because they sound so bad.
Yeah. I am not a Fidelity snob at all. I'm the opposite of it. So I listen to music on my Echo Dot, which you're specifically, like, even Amazon says, pair this with your...
Yeah. It's better to listen to music on your phone, though. Did you listen to music on your phone before? You just set your phone on the table and then
I will sometimes listen. But, you know, I also listen to podcasts news and, you know, so... I don't know. But then when I do want to listen to music, all my playlists are in Apple Music. And so very easily I can just say, you know, use her name and say pair Bluetooth and she pairs. And then, you know, I can play. Like, that is not that hard to do.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But I think it is hard for some people. And so, you know, I mean, and I have some smart devices in my house too. Mm-hmm. And they're automatically all, once you hook them up, they all go to your home folder on iOS. And they're all there for you.
All
and
home
you can,
kit
you know,
and all that.
Yeah, in HomeKit, you can turn off your lights, unlock your door, all those things.
Yeah.
And you can do that with the Amazon Echo as well, but you have to set it up separately.
Yeah, a lot tougher to set up than HomeKit is. But I do wonder, is, you know, how much do people care about this smart home automation stuff at this point? How much of a reason will that be to go buy this? You know, they really, of course they said, hey, come home and say, hey, Siri, I'm home. It's movie night. And it'll set the scene that you can program in the home app, which is easy enough to do. But it seems like the music use case is far more popular than the home automation. But again, you're going to want all this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And it'll also do sports scores and the weather and all sorts of things like that. So...
Well, I was listening to Mark Gurman from Bloomberg, who, you know, has all the Apple sources. I was listening to him this morning before the keynote, and he was talking about the Siri speaker. And the woman at Bloomberg asked, well, what about ordering stuff? Like, what about getting toilet paper and paper towels? And he sort of avoided the question a little bit. He said, you know, they're going to hopefully have deep integration with developers, so developers can do this. It won't be Amazon. Like, I'm not going to be able to say, you know, hey, HomePod, order me paper towels, which I sometimes do, not often, but in situations it's nice to be able to do that. And I'm doing it more and more. And, you know, it depends who are they going to integrate with, not Google Shopping, you know?
Well, you know what? Actually, I think they could, I could see Google integrating with this. Now, the reason being, Google is that, okay, they're getting into hardware. They're a baby hardware company right now. You know, they're not fully grown. They got the Pixel, they got the home speaker. You know, every once in a while they might make a Chromebook and then kill it off after a couple of years. But their business isn't hardware, right? Apple's business is to sell you hardware kind of first and foremost. Google's really more of an ad-driven company. Amazon's business is to sell you stuff from their storefront, right? And all of their hardware kind of enables you to buy more things from them. The reason I think Google might do this, and I'm curious about Amazon, we'll see, time will tell, but Google will make their apps for any device. Google will make their apps available on anybody. Now, Apple didn't mention whether or not the HomePod would work with Spotify. They didn't mention all these things. Clearly, Apple Pay and iMessage is only going to work from iPhone to iPhone or from Apple device to Apple device because we don't see Apple Pay on Android. The one place where Apple really has brought their stuff that I can think of right now, cross-platform, is Apple Music, right? Now, it's interesting to me. I could totally see Google someday integrating their, you know, maps or their calendar or Gmail with the HomePod speaker. And if Apple has the right third-party tools, I could see Google tapping into that. Amazon's a little different. If I feel like it would make sense if, and I guess it might depend on how many they sell of these things, right? But if the majority of folks have HomePod in their home instead of an Echo, what does Amazon care if you're buying your toilet paper from an Apple speaker or a, right? But it depends on what their ambition is. If they want to match Apple in terms of hardware prominence, then, you know, that could be a deciding factor to keep that away, because so many people go to Amazon storefront versus Google Shopping or versus, you know, whatever, right?
Yeah, that will be interesting, because I think from what I understand about Amazon is they don't really make money off of the paper towels or the toilet paper or that stuff. It's Prime subscriptions and cloud and all that. So, yeah, I guess we'll see. I mean, maybe Apple would have Walmart or Jet, you know, the same, Walmart now owns Jet, something like that. I mean, but that is why they announced this speaker now, which didn't really happen with Amazon. I think they announced it and then it was like 3 months later it came out, but it didn't give time for developers really to have a lot of skills already.
Yeah.
So I think now they're just saying like, hey, developers, here's this thing, develop for it as long as you're willing to also live inside our walled garden. And so, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out what kind of company Amazon is and whether or not they'll care how much on how you access their stuff. It does seem as though, in a very small and slight way, but an important one nonetheless, for especially if you love watching video streaming online and all that stuff, that their relationship with Apple is improving somewhat. Mm-hmm. So for years, you haven't been able to buy an Apple TV set-top box through Amazon's website. And for years, you haven't been able to get Amazon Prime Video on the Apple TV set-top box. Now that's different. They said that Tim Cook said on stage at the WWDC keynote that Amazon Prime Video streaming is coming to the Apple TV. And they didn't mention it during the keynote, but it's been widely reported that the Apple TV will be sold on Amazon's website. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, these companies are competing, you know, 1 minute and then somewhat friendly when it makes sense for them to be. So maybe there's a small glimmer of hope for being able to order your paper towels from a HomePod someday.
And, you know, maybe that's not something that we actually need. Like, maybe I've been convinced that I need it because I can do it, because I have a device that can do it. Like, but really, how far is the grocery store? I pass it every day.
Yeah.
I just think, oh, I have this device where I can order toilet paper.
Yeah.
I should use it.
I've become more and more of an Amazon shopper, you know, over the last few
years. I know, I sit next to you. I see the piles of boxes.
You see the boxes that come in, and I buy all sorts of stuff, you know, whether it's, you know, granola bars or paper towels or
water bottle sponges.
Yeah, I did buy, and Megan made fun of me for this, bought a little water bottle brush that you like stick into the water bottle and you can turn around from Amazon. And again, I just haven't found the usefulness for the Echo speakers. So, but when I do have it plugged in, I'm just kind of saying, well, hey, put it in my cart, but I don't necessarily want to complete the transaction there. I'm not sure that I'm comfortable enough giving Amazon or anyone else full decision-making power over what type of paper towel brand I got or what type of, you know, buttery popcorn or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. I get it. Well, I'm interested in all of your picks. You're going to give me your favorite iPad, iPhone picks, and then we're going to answer some of your questions, and then we're going to do our app cap. But first, I want to take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. If you've gotten a mortgage, you know it can be a huge hassle. You're running all over town. You're digging through old files and paperwork, and it doesn't have to be that way. You here listening or watching, you're a geek. I know you like to throw problems at technology and throw technology at problems, and that you can do with Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient and it's powerful. If you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. Based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all the home loans for which you qualify and find the one that is right for you, just for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/iOS today. Don't forget to add that iOS today so they know that we sent you there. That's rocketmortgage.com/iOS today. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for the support of iOS today. All right, Nate's picks. I know everyone's wondering what your favorite apps are.
I mean, there's a ton of apps that I use. I guess I'm an app happy guy or whatever. But the stuff that I've really been into a lot lately has been some games. Should I start there?
Yeah, sure.
So not too long ago, this game called Old Man's Journey came out. And I think this is just a beautiful game. It's fairly simple, but basically you can kind of control the world by moving different hills to get your old man traveler here where you want him to. the art style is gorgeous. I do kind of feel bad because at times, let's see if I can get him up here. I have to get the old man around by literally throwing him down waterfalls, and you're going to see that right now.
Does he know how to swim?
He just kind of slips and slides through. So let's see if I can get him here. So I just kind of pull that hill up, and then I can crank this bridge across, and then I'm going to get my buddy over here. And so the music is great in this game as well, and the art style has like a really cool, like kind of mixed media watercolorish, you know, pastel kind of feel to it, kind of the sort of thing that you might see from kind of some of the children's books that I read, you know, back in the 80s and 90s. And here you're gonna see him fall down the waterfall. But he handles it. He's a tough old guy. But throughout different parts of the game, there are different scenes and different people he can interact with. And then there are even things that will trigger flashbacks. Now, I don't want to give any spoilers here, but a lot of the flashbacks that he has had in seeing some of these different things do have to do with what looks like a long-lost love, maybe, or maybe a friend that he's going to see. It's not totally clear, you know, like where the story's going, but it's a really beautiful game and one that I highly encourage. It's a calm game. It's not the sort of, you know, it's not like, you know, Call of Duty on your phone, or it's not even as fast and as active as, say, you know, Super Mario Run or something. But it actually kind of reminds me of Monument Valley in the sense that it's slow, beautiful music, and kind of you can go on your own pace, and built around puzzles as well.
I like how it features an older character. It's good, no age discrimination there.
Yeah, no age discrimination, and it's nice to see some diversity in that regard as well.
It's $4.99.
It is $4.99. I think it's worth the $5 that you get. You know, it's if this were the sort of thing that were on a console, it'd be $20 or $30, I'm sure. But here it is, and it's both on the iPhone or the iPad. I should explain. Here's that picture that you sent me of me in that crazy Snapchat filter. So in case you're wondering what's on my phone, sorry about that. But yeah, old Man's Journey is fantastic.
It looks good on that screen too.
Yeah, on this big iPad display. And then, it just came out, but Monument Valley was one of my very favorite games, period, much less on iOS devices. And now Monument Valley 2 is here on the iPhone. So we literally, both of us, mm-hmm. downloaded it during the keynote. Sorry to take our attention away, Tim. But but we actually, it's also $5, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's hard to say, will I like this one as much as the original? I don't know. I guess maybe it's a little early to say. But genuinely, Monument Valley, the first one, was a game that I beat maybe like 5 times. I played it on iPads, iPhones, Android devices. And an absolutely beautiful and groundbreaking game. And again, kind of more focused on the visual, taking your time with it. A silent character as well. I'm super excited to play this. And the first one was definitely worth the money. I'm excited to see Us 2 Games, the company behind it, back. And I think this one will be worth it as well.
I like that you don't have to buy it for the iPhone and the iPad. Like if you buy it on one, you can use it on both.
Exactly.
So you played it. You played the first one through 3 or 4 times. Cause I didn't. I loved it when I played it through the first.
At least I might have. I don't know. I lost count really because I played it. I've played it on the iPhone maybe that many times. I played it on the iPad a couple times because I want to see it on the larger display. And then, you know, from time to time we review Android devices, and I've played it on that too.
Was it? But is it a different game?
Or no,
you forgot.
I just really like it. I just really
You're like
it.
I'm really good at this.
No, it's
now.
Great. Well, they had an expansion that came later called The Hidden Shores, mm-hmm. and then there was a special level that came through Project Red. So if you bought that level, I think it was like $1 or $2. They'd give some money to AIDS research and looking for a cure for AIDS. So I'll go back to my home screen so it can be a little quiet there. But it's just a really beautiful game, and I really enjoy playing it. The puzzles are simple, but the music's very serene. It's very calming. You know, I like to get in there and have a challenging game like Zelda on my Switch, or, you know, a racing simulator like Forza on my Xbox, or, you know, something like Battlefield on my PlayStation. But those are high intensity games, and it's nice every once in a while to have something that's a little different, a little bit more calming. So if you think of like the difference between going and seeing an action blockbuster like The Fast and the Furious in theaters versus seeing like
Moonlight,
you know, a different tone, different mood, different experience. And to me, games are just as exciting as important of an art form as films or books or anything else. And so Monument Valley was just one I went to again and again because it was just such a beautiful, albeit brief, experience. So, you know, for me, Monument Valley 2 has got a lot to live up to, but the expansions were really great for the first title, and I'm super stoked to play Monument Valley 2.
That was one that they showed off when they were showing off the new App Store, and I guess you could read about the developers. Because that is something that I actually went and did after, you know, after playing Monument Valley.
Yeah.
I was like, who are these guys? I want to know more about them. So in that sense, I could understand. I wouldn't say that it gives the App Store better discoverability in terms of apps, but in terms of saying, like, why would I want to pay $4.99? Mm-hmm. And then you think, okay, look, these are artists, and here's what they've done in the past, and they're definitely worth my $5.
Yeah, I haven't read that story. We don't have the new App Store. I think that's coming out with iOS 11. I'm not sure, which is this fall. But Us2 is a fascinating company. Mm-hmm. They make a lot of the stuff that you see with Google's VR, they're you know, doing like the visual design for a lot of that. They're making apps for big companies, I think like Ford and others. But then they also have worked on like this open source project to help people who can't see, like, get around in public spaces across different apps and all sorts of things like that. They're a mixture of artists and folks who are making corporate marketing stuff, but also, you know, social good type things too. Mm-hmm. So a super fascinating company. Us2 is really, really interesting. But definitely for most people, what you know them for is Monument Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I guess I'll name one more game and then I'll save Detour for the app cap.
Or should I do Detour now? App Cap is your very favorite. So you told me that the other game was your very favorite. But if
it's
Detour
so hard. I'm going to save Detour because I feel like Detour is my favorite new thing.
Okay.
And one of my favorite games, this is a favorite too, is Steven Universe Attack the Light. And it is a game that you can play on your iPad, your iPhone. I've been playing it lately again for like a second time on my Apple TV. And so the Steven Universe is a cartoon for kids, but a lot of adults, myself included, really like this game. And basically you have these different characters here. This is Steven, and it's an RPG. You just kind of like move through the different levels here. And then when you encounter bad guys, it's a turn-based RPG. So you go into battle and then you just select which character you want to choose first, and then you choose an attack on a bad guy and you just kind of take turns. So if you've played something like Final Fantasy or RPGs like that on a console, the way that this game works will be pretty similar, or even like Paper Mario on the Nintendo series or Nintendo consoles. Now, one of the reasons why I'm calling this one out, it's been out for a while, is a sequel to this is actually coming, and it will be available for consoles. So you'll be able to play it on your PlayStations, or I think the Nintendo Switch as well. Not totally sure, but it's a great game. So if you haven't heard of it, and if you're looking for kind of a lightweight RPG-style game that you can play on the go, kind of in bits and pieces throughout your day, or if you actually want to sit down on your couch and get a Bluetooth controller, you can play this on your Apple TV as though it were a console. It's a really fun game and with a really charming art style. And, you know, if you're an adult or kid who happens to like the Steven Universe cartoon series, then you'll definitely be into this too.
What controller do you use with your Apple TV?
I have one made by a company called Steelcase. And it actually has charging from the Lightning port. So
is it the Nimbus or is that something else?
I don't think it's called the Nimbus. I forget actually. I think the Nimbus was an earlier version of that sort of thing that would work with, iPads and iPhones. But, we should, you know, fact check that, or let me see if I can find it.
But you can use your iPhone too, right? Or your iPad?
Yeah, if you're using your iPhone or your iPad, then it's touchscreen. You know, there might be some controls for the actual touch display remote. But I haven't tried that because I have this controller.
A steel case.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah, it's really great. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is called the Nimbus. I'm looking it up here. And I'll see if I can find it. Yeah, this is the one. So it's 50 bucks. It's not cheap. But yeah, this is the one that I have. And if you're used to an Xbox controller or a PlayStation controller, you'll feel right at home with this. The battery life is fantastic. I think it takes like every few months for me to charge it.
And you just charge it with a lightning cable.
Yeah, it's the same thing that you charge your iPhone or iPad with. It's pretty fantastic. Yeah, so that is Steven Universe Attack of the Light.
Okay, well, you also had a special request to feature your favorite stickers.
Oh, yeah. So our lovely team here at Twit, Patrick developed some Twit stickers. And these are iMessage stickers. You should go check these out. And you can send great stuff. So, you know, I don't know if in emoji speak, I guess it would be like, hey, I'm at Twit on iOS today with Megan Maroney. I don't know. What am I saying here? I'm also saying, please tell me when to read an ad. Because I'm going to need a heads up to that. But there's great stickers here. If you love our shows want to throw some stuff at your friends here, I'm going to throw a little Jeff Jarvis your way. You can send those along. Here's Jason Howell with like a really cool like Blink-182 haircut.
I love it. All from like the 2005 to 2009 era.
They're super cool. So you got Padre in here. There's lots of good stuff. So. You know, they're fun, but I really enjoy iMessage stickers, and now Twit finally has some. Another great sticker pack that I love is called Sticker Pals, and this one is great. There's like little animated characters. One of my favorite ones is this little like frantic looking iPhone who's getting overloaded by some messages, or he's chilling out listening to some music. Or he's sleeping by the charger, or he's just like straight up dead. But there's like a little rock character here. There's a cute little cat. Really great animations. The Twit stickers. Go check those out. Or Sticker Pals. I'm a big fan of that as well.
We should. We'd also be remiss if we didn't show those
Pupmoji. Oh gosh, yeah, Pupmoji. So
those you drew.
Yeah, back during my time at the Wall Street Journal, I did the illustrations here, and this is an illustrated version of Joanna Stern's dog. Joanna Stern was one of my colleagues. She's a columnist there writing great tech reviews. So we had her dog with a MacBook Pro, her dog with a poop emoji
this
next to it.
This is my favorite, I think. It sort of dates it a little bit, because I don't know if anyone has the Snapchat spectacles. But
so it's her dog with Snapchat spectacles.
You're quite an artist.
Yeah, and I drew all these on the iPad Pro with the Apple Pencil. But yeah, that was a fun little project. It's super easy to make iMessage stickers. There are really great templates to do so, and an Xcode. And there you go. So, yeah. that one's called Pupmoji, if you want to find that in the sticker store as well.
And how hard is it to get your stickers into the app store?
It's not too tough. I mean, we did it really, really quickly. I think we had a response within about a day. And with this one, actually, I originally drew like a little Apple logo on the back, and they kicked it back to us, and they said, you can't draw your Apple logo on your stuff. So
that's interesting. So don't draw Apple logos on your stickers.
Yeah. Or I guess, you know, they don't want Google stuff or anything like that, which makes sense. I mean, they want some air of neutrality, maybe. I don't really know. It wasn't quite fully explained as I remember, but it was clear enough. Erase it and you're good to go. So we did, and we were back in real quick. Sticker Pals and the Twit stickers. Pupmoji's great too.
Well, that was the other thing they said in the keynote today. They said stickers were going to be more discoverable. And I know some people in our chat room were like, is that really worth our time? Like more discoverable stickers. But I have heard from developers who are frustrated at the way there's no point in making them because people can't find them. And so a lot of times people use stickers to advertise their app.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about like Pepsi or whatever. I'm talking about like independent developers who are trying to find a way to get it knowledge, you know, it's like, I like stickers. You don't have to like them, but
the iMessage apps in general are pretty great. I mean, let's say that, you know, you are a Square Cash loyalist, and even though Apple Pay person to person is coming, you don't want to give up on Square Cash, fine. Square Cash has an iMessage app. So whether it's a sticker or whether it's, you know, getting movie tickets on Fandango or checking your notes in Evernote to share that with a friend for that recipe you want to give them, or looking up a song in Shazam, there's so many different options. Those all have iMessage apps. So the utility there is whether I'm sending you a, you know, a Pupmoji sticker or money through Square Cash, I don't have to leave our conversation and that app to do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. So I find it to be like a quicker, easier way to get a lot of stuff done. But you're right. I mean, the question of discoverability is a never ending one, especially when there are millions and millions of apps in all of these app stores, whether it's Google Play or Apple's App Store. Either way, it seems like Apple's kind of listening a little bit and trying to do something about these the discoverability questions. But I think those will be there, you know, as long as there are app stores. Mm-hmm. I think people will be asking about how do I find an app, right?
Well, we have some of your questions and some of your comments, but first I am going to thank our sponsor, Blue Apron. If you like to cook at home, you have to spend time shopping and spend time cooking. And sometimes if you don't have a lot of time, you can't do both. And so it is great to have food delivered to you in a box that you can open up and cook. And if you're anything like me, you're going to need step-by-step instructions on that recipe because you're not going to be able to do it yourself. Blue Apron, we're so excited to have them as a sponsor. Not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference. So it's important to know where your food comes from. Blue Apron sets the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. So for less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals in 40 minutes or less. It's dinner the Blue Apron way. We're really getting used to having this. Sometimes we skip a week. You can skip a week if you want, if you have some recipes that your family likes. Good for families, good for single people, good for couples, good for really anyone who eats. And that should be all of us. Their freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they will make it right. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. And because of that, they deliver to 99% of the continental U.S. There's no weekly commitment. Only get deliveries when you want them. You can choose from a variety of new recipes each week, or just let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Here's some upcoming meals that you might be able to get in your Blue Apron box. Warm smoked trout and asparagus salad with fingerling potatoes and garlic croutons. Spiced zucchini enchiladas with creamy lime and tomato rice. Elote style vegetable tostadas with summer squash. Do you know if I pronounced that right? Elote. Elote. Thank you. Elote. Elote. Thank you, Nate. Poblano peppers and cilantro rice and peach honey glazed chicken with mashed sweet potatoes, collard greens, and Thai basil. Check out this week's menu and get 3 meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/iOS today. You not only will eat good, you might learn how to say a few new words, learn about a few new words. Elote. What is elote?
It's corn. Yeah. Corn. Yeah. Mm. So basically like, yeah, Mexican style corn.
Awesome. Yeah. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home cooked meals with Blue Apron. Go to blueapron.com/iOS today. Sign up. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
I should have eaten lunch before this episode. It's just hearing you.
Hearing y'all say elote.
It's killing me here. I'm starving. I think my stomach is grumbling. Oh.
Well, here is a tip from Janice, which I already shared with you. You were as excited to hear about this, so I had to share it with everyone else. You know about the Minnie and Mickey Mouse watch, which you said earlier, the watch face.
Yes. Yes. So I didn't know this until you told me, Megan.
No, thank you, Janice.
Because I always have my phone on silent.
Right. So you probably, if you're a good citizen, you will have your watch on silent, so it's not always beeping. So take it off silent, and then you're going to switch the watch face to the Mickey or the Minnie Mouse, and then I'll have to hold it next to the microphone so you can hear that they will speak to you if you tap it.
It's 2:33. Good afternoon.
Could you hear that?
Yeah, and so she...
It's 2:33.
Yeah, so the first time you tap it, Mickey or Minnie will say good afternoon, good night.
It's 2:33.
Good morning. And then they just say the time. And I love it. Yeah. I had no idea until like 2 days ago. All weekend, I was just like, it's 2:33, it's 2:33, it's 2:33. It's going on.
So Minnie or Mickey will speak to you. Thank you, Janice. This is amazing.
I wonder if Buzz and the other Pixar gang will speak to you too.
Yeah.
They didn't say that.
I know. Why can't we think? Do you know the girl Woody's name? What is her name? Beth?
Rusty? Was
no,
it Rusty?
No, Rusty is from Cars, I think, right? I don't know. I feel like Wendy? Here. I don't know.
I feel like the worst Toy Story
Someone
fan.
Someone help us out on what right girl now. Woody.
Jesse!
Thank you, Brian.
God,
Jesse.
How lame are
Jesse.
We?
Thank you, Chickenhead21, Jesse. okay, so we got a picture from Charles. I love dogs. And Charles says he was watching iOS Today on his Roku last week, and the dog kept taking breaks from eating. Here is his dog watching iOS Today. I don't know why it's not.
Oh, wow. That is a big dog.
Yeah,
that awesome.
Looks, what kind of dog do you think that is?
I don't know. From this angle, I'm thinking bulldog.
Yeah, it looks like a little bulldog.
Beautiful dog.
Watching Leo.
Yeah.
If your dog doesn't watch, subscribe for your dog. He or she is missing out. Okay, Rick wrote us an email about app-specific passwords. Have you heard about this? On June 15th, Apple will require you to create app-specific passwords. And Rick says, can you explain that? Have you heard about this?
This is the first I've heard about it. Okay. But in Apple Keychain, with its password manager, it will predict different passwords for different websites. So it sounds like maybe something similar to that.
Okay, so this is the only, I did some research on it. It only affects apps that use iCloud. So you connect to iCloud in a non-standard way.
Oh, so like
way.
I use IA Writer, and it saves everything I write in IA Writer to the cloud.
Right.
So then maybe
so
for that one,
might
for example.
Need that. But it's some will connect to iCloud in a standard way, and some in a non-standard way. So
the difference
if it
being...
connects to a not, I'm not exactly sure.
Okay.
Through the web API. So they used examples like Outlook and Thunderbird browser. So those will need app-specific passwords, but it's not going to be for every app. It's also for apps that don't support two-factor authentication.
Oh, this seems like a way to... You know, the reason why you'd want two-factor authentication is someone gets your password. They don't get into all your stuff. So if you have a different password for all these different apps, same thing. If someone gets one password, they won't get into all your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a way to...
Sort of, I think. Because, you know, it's hard. It's not easy to use a password manager in your apps. It's not easy at all. So basically what they don't want is you giving your iCloud password to a third-party app.
They're trying
to avoid that.
Which makes sense. You know, this being the first I heard of it, I guess we'll have to try it in practice and see if it's useful, but it sounds like a good idea. In fact, for a while, I've wanted the password manager that I have in like, say, Safari or something to work in apps because I'm letting Apple create the password for, say, my, you know, Xfinity login or whatever, and then I go to the app and I'm like, I don't actually know my password because it was just whatever randomly generated thing that the iCloud Keychain created, and now iCloud Keychain doesn't work in said app. Mm-hmm. So if this solves that problem, I'd be thrilled.
Yeah. So after June 15th, it's not just June 15th, it's June 15th, and forever after that, you're going to need app-specific passwords. And it's not something you have to like remember and put on your calendar or anything. It's going to warn you and say, so you go to appleid.apple.com and then enter in your password and log in. And I did it just to test it out, but I'm pretty sure it shows all of my personal information when I do it. So I'm not going to do it for you right now. But then you go to app-specific passwords under security and then click generate password.
How did I miss that?
Are you in there, appleid.apple.com?
No, I don't want to show everybody my stuff
don't?
Too.
Okay.
My business either.
Don't show anyone
Some
your business.
I'm going to keep personal.
Apple support, we'll link to that in the show notes, has a whole description for this. But I hope that we helped you a little bit, Rick, in understanding that. But I think it might be something that, you know, when I read a lot about it, a lot of people are just like, that's going to drive everyone crazy. But
yeah.
I don't know that it will. I think it's a very narrow window of apps that you're going to need to do it for. But we'll see. Outlook is, I mean, a lot of people use Outlook. Do a lot of people use Outlook through their iPad? I don't know.
Why do people use Outlook?
For work, right?
Yeah.
People do.
I've used Outlook because I had to in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Not a fan.
What about the iOS app? Have you used that? I like that.
Oh, the Outlook iOS app is probably the best version of it. But yeah, I have a I feel like Gmail and the built-in mail apps don't have these problems, but sometimes I'll go to Outlook and it like will show me the notification, then you tap on it, and then for some reason it doesn't update. I've been having that problem in AirMail lately too. I'm not exactly sure what the bug is there, but I've seen this on a couple different third-party mail apps. Haven't seen it on Gmail, haven't seen it on the built-in mail app, but I got some frustrations, but I guess that would be a whole other episode.
Your frustrations will start with why there's not
my mail app frustrations.
iPad Mini Pro.
The perfect
and
mail app I have yet to find.
Have you tried Newton?
No.
You should try Newton. That's the one that I've been using lately. Okay. It is not free, but
but it's good?
It's good for... You like to do the Inbox Zero, right?
Yeah.
Like you can snooze.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't I just recommend it again?
I hate the notification bubble. If I see like 8, and you'll never see me in double digits.
Yeah, I like it. I'm trying to make sure there's nothing
personal stuff
here. Let's go to
a lot going on.
all right, here's
See, those woes and us got me concerned.
I don't think I'll reveal anything with my bullet journal email here. So it gives a lot of features for snoozing. So later afternoon, tomorrow, day after Saturday. I like that.
That is really great. I have not seen that.
And
that's cool.
Now my watch is turned on. I didn't turn the sound back off. Everything's going crazy. Also, you don't use your Amazon Echo, but if you had one, you can ask Newton to read your email. So all I have to do is say, hey, and ask Newton if I have email, and then my Amazon Echo will read my email, and I can snooze it from there, which I really like.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I gotta turn my sound off. See if my Apple Watch. All right.
What did you hit? That's if you lose your phone or your watch.
I don't know what's going on. I think I'm getting a lot of emails and I need to turn them off. Thank goodness. Here's another tip that you gave me because I was saying when I took a day off last week, I wanted to go through my notifications and turn them off so I wasn't getting like Apple notifications, watch notifications while I was like swimming in the pool, which I didn't turn them off. But you said you just turn it on Do Not Disturb.
Exactly. Yeah. And they didn't show up then, which is a really quick and easy way to do it. One of the first things I do with an Apple Watch, or I tell anybody to, is go and turn all the notifications off and then just decide what do I absolutely want on my wrist, right? Because what you want on your phone is different than what you're going to want on your wrist. I'm wearing this thing, you know, except for when I'm sleeping or showering, basically. So it's got to be pretty important. For me, there's a threshold and it's pretty high. You know, no Twitter here, no ESPN, whatever, that sort of stuff. Going to the Do Not Disturb is a real easy way to silence that for a while.
Yeah, that's good. And you said this earlier before, but you change your watch face when you're going on vacation so you don't get all of the like activity warnings and all that stuff.
So I'm normally on this like, you know, modular watch face, and then I'll just like swipe over to Mickey or Minnie, or there's the one with just the activity rings and then time. So I kind of switch it up because Monday, you know, on work days, I want to know, okay, where do I got to be at what time? And although sometimes I'm late, I hate being late. And
sometimes you're late.
definitely like to, if it's a free day, it's a clear day and I can go with the flow. Get my calendar out of my face.
That's smart.
That's kind of a roll.
That is very smart. Nina writes, I can't stop watching iOS today. Nima. And she sent a picture also. And you can see in the top right corner, she's at 1% battery level. That's pretty, that is some dedication.
Nima is ride or die.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. I mean, that's what you do with your 1%. I am impressed.
What a big compliment.
I take it as a compliment.
And to iOS today.
Yes.
Wow.
And then we have one more email from Kevin who says, where is my Google Keep app on my Apple Watch? I wondered the same thing. There isn't one. All iPhone apps don't have Apple Watch apps, sadly, and there's not one for Google Keep. He also wanted to know, why is my Google Assistant on my iPhone not talking to my existing Google Keep? Mine does talk to my existing Google Keep, so I'm not sure. Maybe it's just you're logged into a different Google account. I'm not sure. Like maybe you downloaded assistant and logged into a different email address.
I gave up on Keep a while ago. I should revisit it and try it out.
Well, I don't think it, at this point, I don't know what it does that Notes doesn't do.
Mm-hmm. So. Notes and reminders have gotten really great. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, I'm kind of pretty happy with them. They used to not be so hot.
Yeah. And I'm excited if I do end up getting the Air Home. What's it called? Pod Home?
HomePod.
If I do eventually become a HomePod owner, that I would be excited about, just saying, hey, remind me to do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, which I mean, actually, why would I need that? Because I can just do this. And my watch, unlike you, I wear my watch all the time except sleeping. So that includes showering, because sometimes you need to get an alert about nothing in the shower. Actually, you don't need that at all. But I get it.
Yeah. Well, you know. It's good to give yourself the options to get those notifications if you want them. And since it's, you know, water resistant, you can do that.
And speaking of keeping yourself clean,
let me thank our sponsor. Yeah, let me tell you about Oars and Alps. They're one of the sponsors of today's episode. And I've been trying their stuff out. And I got to say, I'm the kind of guy who's been washing my face with like the regular bar of soap that I use on the rest of my body for quite a while. So I'm sorry if that grosses anybody else at home. I told some people here in the office, and they're like, what is wrong with you? And then they gave me a box of this Oars and Elf stuff to try out because they're our sponsor. And I've been trying it and I really like it. I like really genuinely like it. So I've never really put any hydrating lotion on my face, and now I'm giving this a shot, and it's kind of nice. It's a nice way to feel kind of fresh and, dare I say, soft. And it's like really smooth. So it is beard friendly. I don't have, you know, the lush, you know, most interesting man in the world kind of beard going. I got a little beard going, and this is beard friendly. So with this one, you just kind of rub it on your face after a shower. And there is a really nice power cleansing face stick, which uses, I guess, a little bit of a charcoal style ingredient. And this, you just literally rub it on your face, kind of the same way that you would rub your stick of deodorant on your armpits. You just rub this on your face. And blackheads, whiteheads, those sorts of things. It's really great. This was actually kind of built with an active guy in mind. And, I do my runs and play some basketball and pick up soccer games and things like that. Get a little sweaty out there outdoors, going on a long hike, whatever it might be. And this stuff is fantastic. And they also have a deodorant, which is great. And a lot of their products use this Alpine Caribou Moss. It is a deodorant and not an antiperspirant, so you're still going to sweat. It'll keep you smelling great, which is nice. Personally, I like to sweat. I'm not really into the antiperspirants. They usually contain aluminum. Don't want that stuff on my armpits. And so this is pretty great. They got a full suite of really useful things. And I'm becoming an Oars and Alps convert. I gotta say, it's powerful skincare made for a guy's dehydrated skin and active lifestyle. And it's all really, really great, great stuff. They have their 2-in-1 hydrating and anti-aging face and eye cream is non-greasy. It's fast absorbing. They're no nonsense natural deodorant. It's going to nourish your skin and absorb some of that odor too, as I mentioned. And everything's super portable and TSA approved, so you can take this through airport security if you need to as well. It's made with powerful and natural ingredients that offer intense hydration, and these products last up to 3 months, so they're going to be lasting as long as you need them to, really. Oars and Alps was actually developed by two women, Laura and Mia, for their husbands, and they partnered with leading chemists to create this Oars and Alps line to protect their husband's skin from extreme outdoor conditions that often resulted in dry, cracked skin. Laura and Mia also set out to solve a common problem, spilled product in gym bags. So they created the first solid face wash for men. These products are all perfect take on the go kind of thing, whether you want to throw them in your gym bag, your work bag, your travel, you know, whatever makes you happy for your next adventure. And their name was actually inspired by their husband's favorite outdoor activities, Oars as in rowing, Alps as in skiing. And it's really kind of pretty genius stuff. Your skincare should keep up with your on the go lifestyle, and Oars and Alps is definitely doing that for me. And I gotta say, it's kind of timely. Father's Day is coming up. We have a lot of graduation season happening here. So these are great gifts for Father's Day. and for recent grads. I don't know if my dad and brother are going to be watching, but I'm going to be throwing some of this stuff their way as well. Oars and Alps is offering the TWIT audience a fresh start to your day. You can join the thousands of guys, myself included, and Jason Howell. He's been testing it out. He was telling me about it before I gave it a shot myself. Using Oars and Alps, you can visit oarsandalps.com/TWIT to receive 15% off your first order. Great discount. That's oarsandalps.com/TWIT, TWIT. And we thank Oars and Alps for their support.
All right. This is the time where we wear hats.
This is the time where we wear hats
because we are talking about our favorite apps.
This is the app cap, right?
Yes. This is our app cap. And
I'm ready to go fishing. I'm ready to just chill in the park. No sunburn happened here. Not only is my skin going to be hydrated, soft, and smooth, and not dry, thanks to Oars and Alps, I'm not going to get any sunburn either. I got it from all directions. This is pretty good stuff. That's a really good hat for you, Nate. It also kind of has this like patchwork corduroy feeling. Like I feel like Jamiroquai, you know, in the late 90s, if he was on TWIT and he was sitting right here, this is the hat he would have chose. Burke chose this for me. And I got to say, Burke, man, I don't think you could have done much better than this.
This is great.
I'm ready to go on a boat.
Yeah.
I'm ready to sail. I'm ready for adventure. I'm kind of really enjoying this.
I know my hat pales in comparison. I don't know. I'm ready for nothing.
Yours actually looks like really appropriate for you. It's like hat you would genuinely wear. It's like really nice and good for your face.
All right. So now we're going to talk about our favorite apps because app cap. I'm going to start Blipbar. Have you heard of Blipbar?
No, Blipbar. I've never heard of it, but I love the name.
Perhaps it's Blipbar.
Blipbar.
And you're a car guy, so you will appreciate this. And I teased it earlier about the WWDC. They talked about AR AR kit. This is AR, sort of.
Okay.
You aim your camera at something, and then it will show you what it is. So, like, if I'm going to aim my camera... Well, you can't really. There's, and it says technology, business. Can you see those?
Wow,
words?
Yeah, the floating words kind of coming out of the screen.
Yeah, so I'll show you then what it looks like. Cool. So I aimed it at my dog.
Okay.
And you can see it says like animal, mammal, cute, looking. That's what. So it's like you're, you know, if you aim it at a person, like say you wanted to, you ran into Mike Pence and you couldn't remember his name. This was in a newspaper, but it actually came up with Mike Pence. Like that came up. This is just a screenshot. Wow. I can't do it because we don't actually have Mike Pence here in the studio with us today. Not today, but it came up with Mike Pence and details about Mike Pence. And you could aim it at a car and it would come up.
Tell you what kind of car it is.
Yeah. So let me see if it, still brings up. So I aimed it at my cars and
You drive a Toyota Prius.
Yeah, and then and a Sienna, and it just, this is not what my car looks like in the inside, but like say you were driving, you were walking around and you saw a car and you're like, that's an awesome car, and then it would know what car it is, and then you can look around the car.
I like that.
This one's way cooler than cleaner than my Sienna.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, so if you've ever, I mean, you probably know what the car is when you see a car, but you might not.
I pride myself in recognizing some cars, but yeah, every once in a while you get stumped out there. And, you know, hey, I've never sat inside of a Lamborghini, but if I see one in a parking lot, I would like to know what it looks like inside. That is really cool.
Yeah, so sometimes it got it right and sometimes it didn't. Like sometimes it thought my Prius was a plug-in, which it isn't. But, you know, that's going to be the issues. But you can see what you would pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Look at that.
Yeah, so Blipbar. I'll try it here and see again. So, whether it's
information on people or a car or a thing, it gives you pretty great kind of Texas
results.
Let's see
what it thinks you are.
Does it think I'm like 7 years old or that
it
I'm like Gilligan?
Healthcare?
Okay.
Festival?
Oh, yeah.
Musician? Actor? Profession?
Ooh.
Medicine? Actor, okay. People? It did not know
it's a little
who you
confused.
Are. Treadmill? I don't know why it thought that was a treadmill. But yeah, it definitely gets things wrong. Which is also part of the fun. Also.
Coffee table, flooring chair. Cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Blipbar, it is free. Mm-hmm. And you just, I mean, that's our dream, to be able to point our camera at things and figure out what it is. But I really do think that is many people's dream in AR, to be able to, like, walk up to someone and say, oh, I've met you 100 times and I don't remember your name, and then just go.
Well, it's kind of
surreptitiously.
It's kind of the promise of Google Glass was like, you know, telling you when and where and those sorts of things. It's nice to have it in your phone instead of on your face, but I wonder someday, who knows?
Yeah, but I mean, if you had it in your phone, people would totally know. Like if you had it in your watch, that you'd just be like,
you're just like, oh, hey, what's going on? Although a lot of people have their phone out all the time. I'm sure some people could get away with it.
Yeah, true. But Blipar, it also gives you an idea that a lot of this is going to be, Blipar is selling this to companies that want, you know, to put advertising everywhere.
Okay.
So that is also what, you know, that you would be able to.
That makes sense.
You know, it would show you like a taco. And if you put it in a taco, it would show you a Taco Bell ad. Like even if it were just like a standard taco. So.
Wow. I think you can taco a little better than Taco Bell, but
right. I know you could. So
no
I'm
disrespect
just saying
to those Taco Bell lovers out there. But.
Yes, exactly. That's
Megan Maroney.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you. So what's your favorite app of the week?
Well, my favorite app of the week, it's this one called Detour. There are immersive audio walking tours, and it's really fantastic, and it is available for the iPhone. They do have this app available in lots of great different cities. So you can get it in San Francisco, New York, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., New Orleans, Portland, Savannah, Barcelona, Marrakesh, Berlin, all sorts of great places. Let me turn on my little audio here. It is a free app, but you have to buy the audio tours. It'll give you the first few minutes. But I've been using them around in my neighborhood in the Lower Haight. And if I were here, actually, you could start the tour. But it just plays the tour through your phone. It's pretty great. And actually, Liz Gaines from 60dB was on this app and telling me about the Paint Ladies. I've been wondering, wow, how did she get there? But that's really interesting. Super cool, but definitely someone who I would trust about different information. And there are really great tips as well. It gives you directions on where to walk. In San Francisco, there are a lot of different great ones. I'll say I'm just visiting. It's not my hometown. I say I work here. But there's lots of different great cities out there. And there's a fantastic one in Oakland that has to do with murals and the Black Panthers. There's a great one about the Beat Generation that I bought recently. Now, tours range about like $5 to $10 each. So they're not exactly super cheap, but if you're going to a place where you've never been before, you don't have a tour guide with you, this is kind of a really great fun way to get to know the city you're in. And I've actually enjoyed getting to know the city I live in, not even as a tourist, but just learning some things about Haight-Ashbury provided by KQED, the public radio station out in San Francisco. So there's lots of great stuff out here as well. It's a really kind of a blast of an app, and I've really been enjoying it. You can see here's like a video preview of Greenwich Village in New York, $5. And you know, you're checking out the tour, you're seeing the video, and you say, you know, I'm going to go to New York next month or whatever. You can save it for later. So that if you do want to spend the money on it, you can. It's you know, not the cheapest app, but the content is high quality, and these people are making it. So definitely something I support and think is pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, if you've already paid to go somewhere, you know, we've all had that experience where we're like, what to do? And you're just like constantly on your phone like, oh, and then like go to the next place. But just to have a whole tour of where to go, I think that would be worth $5 and read by interesting people.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. There's really, really fantastic folks that they have in here. You know, chefs, artists, painters, poets, journalists, really interesting personalities, and people who have genuine connections to the places that they're in. And I'm going to be traveling to London and Paris in July. And I'm actually going to be using some of this when I'm out there as well, and seeing how good it is, you know, abroad as I've been enjoying it here at home.
John Perry Barlow does one of San Francisco. Internet founder of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. That looks really good. It's and he was also the lyric writer for the Grateful Dead. I guess that's probably more why he's giving us a tour of San Francisco rather than founding the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Yeah, but he's got a couple reasons to be in that app, though.
it's an hour and 20 minutes. And it includes tips, and that's cool.
Yeah, it's really, really fun, really great. I've been totally having a blast with it.
I'm excited about this. Thank you. I think you did your AppCap proud. I think you really did your hat proud.
Well,
you didn't embarrass the hat.
You know, you and Leo set the bar high. I want to come correct. I want to deliver something good. And I'm hoping that if folks do support this app, that they'll have more great tours and more great cities. But I think they're off to a fantastic start. Mm-hmm. And they've got a lot of the major U.S. cities and some great ones in Europe and Asia as well. And it's pretty cool.
Well, Nate, you will hopefully come back next week. I hope I haven't scared you away.
I'm going to think about it. We'll see.
We're going to talk about some...
I get to wear this hat again.
No, it's a different hat.
Different hat every week. Okay,
so next week we're going to talk about some running apps because we're both runners and maybe some tools that we use for running with our iDevices. Maybe we'll give some Father's Day gift suggestions too because that's coming up and you have
a
dad.
Great idea. And my dad does have an iPhone and an iPad.
Mm-hmm. And we've shared stories about our dads. They both got us into technology.
Yep.
So we owe them at least some sort of crappy iPhone case.
Something like that.
Just kidding, Dad. Well, thank you for joining us. Thank you for watching. Like we said, if you want to see the keynote and our color commentary on that, you can download that at twit.tv pretty soon. And you could subscribe to the show at twit.tv/iOS. You can email us. You can email me at megan@twit.tv or email the show at ios@twit.tv. And with questions, comments, pictures of you or your dog watching the show. We love to see them. Nate is at NateOG on Twitter.
On Twitter, on Instagram. I think mine's a little bit funkier and a little bit cooler than Gilligan's, but if I'm going for a more mature, adventurous look, Gilligan's got, sets the standard. I maybe a little smaller, but he's a fashion icon. It's hard to compete with that.
And we have been on a 5-hour iOS tour together today. Oh, we've been talking about this.
A 5-hour tour.
So,
yeah.
Subscribe to the show, twit.tv/iOS, and we will see you next week on iOS Today.